This is a Crowd podcast.
Just to warn you before we start, this episode contains references to drug use. Some of it is graphic. So if you want another episode, try our one about Chadwick Boseman or Sage Stallone. Okay, you want to know about John Belushi? There's two scenes we've got to talk about. Here's the first one. He's got to sneak across a lawn to the steps of a house. That's it. Dull, yeah? Easy. Right. Here's what we see. A man in a black coat and black woolly hat running on from right of screen, slipping over like he didn't mean to, trying to get up and falling again. We're 2 seconds in and it's funny already. He jumps to his feet, throws a glance to his left, glance to his right, but exaggerated, like his whole body is doing it. You're laughing again. Now he spins round, starts running low to the ground, stops, spins to face the camera, holding a sort of wrestler's crouch, like he reckons he's going to be attacked. Little jump to the left, little jump right, another spin, up the steps of the house, scuttling, jumping round to face the front, arms out, like he's ready to tackle someone. Left, right, a wave of the arm, calling his mates over, and that's it. It takes maybe 20 seconds. There's no dialogue. He doesn't say a word. His expression barely changes. All he's done is cross a lawn. But it's sensational. You can't help but laugh.
Here we go. Rolling sound. Quiet.
Right. Scene number two.
Ready and action.
Now he's in a house. There's a party going on. He's coming down the stairs in a toga made out of white bed sheets, like a chubby Roman emperor, if Roman emperors did frat parties. There's a bloke on the stairs playing the guitar, quite smug looking, singing this sad little folk song to these three girls who look half bored, half in love. Belushi stops, deadpan, glances down at the man as if he's thinking, what the hell is this? Glances down the other way as if an idea's forming in his head. Eyeballs up, swinging round like the idea's formed, he lunges to his left, grabs the acoustic guitar, wrenches it out of the bloke's hands. Bang, smashes it against the wall. Bang, does it again. Not much guitar left now, just bits of wood and string. Bang! Does it one more time, just to be sure. He hands it back to the man, gently, like he's coming out of a trance. Looks slightly embarrassed. Shrugs, as if to say, what could I do? Only one word this time. Said with his big black eyebrows going up apologetically. Sorry. Why is it so funny? Because of him, his face, the way he looks. It's not complicated, it's not clever. But it is, when you think about it. Because you can't think of anyone else doing what he's just done and making it so good. Okay, actually, there's another scene, a jump cut. We're 4 years on, not on the set of a college campus anymore. A bungalow in LA. Although, being LA, it's not really a bungalow. Not like you're picturing it. This is a private residence at the Chateau Marmont Hotel, reserved for superstars, for the kings and queens of the Hollywood scene. Proper luxury. Although, you wouldn't know that looking around. There's mess everywhere. Empty bottles, boxes, bits of A4 paper scattered on the floor, on the sofa. Dirty plates, dirty glasses, ashtrays piled high, an unmade bed, a horrible smell. Like the bins haven't been emptied, like there's something rotting under the thick carpet. Belushi looks different now. He looks terrible, like he's not sleeping, like he's eating junk when he's eating at all. Those eyes, they're dark, like the spark's gone. His pupils are black dots, his face flabby, his hair wild. There's a belt tied around his forearm. A woman bending over next to him. She's got dark, curly hair, a pale face, sticking out cheekbones, but not in a good way. Like the skin is falling off her. She's got a spoon and she's got a syringe. First, the syringe goes in her arm. Then she pushes it into Belushi. They step back, fall on the floor, arms loose, eyes rolling back, smiling like they're sharing their own special magical joke, grimacing like they're seeing things you never want to see, spiraling away. He's always different, John Belushi. His parents are Albanian parents, immigrants to the US before he's born. He never looks like a film star, only 5'6", always chunky, even when he's lean by his standards. Dark hair, round face, these thick black eyebrows that jump around. He grows up doing improv comedy in Chicago. He's a natural at it, the moves, the invention, the goofing about. So when this show starts in October 1975 called Saturday Night Live, NBC, massive deal, a mix of comedy sketches and satire, he gets an audition. Now this is big. Saturday Night Live changes TV. It changes comedy. Here's a list of the stars who started out there. Dan Aykroyd, Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, Mike Myers, Adam Sandler, Tina Fey, Will Ferrell, Jimmy Fallon. Okay. You can watch Belushi's audition on YouTube.
Dave, you ready?
The point when the show's producers haven't got it yet. When they're thinking, this outsider doesn't look right.
Okay, all
right. Isn't clever enough. He's in a brown jacket and white checked shirt. A green screen behind him. Black hair sort of parted in the middle, but swept back messily. Like he can't be asked, but that he's practiced not being asked. He stares down the camera, head down, like he wants to fight it. He pretends to do a comedy warm-up. A double take to right, a double take to the left. Then he says, okay.
Okay.
Let's work on the eyebrows. The camera zooms in, can't help itself. He says, left eyebrow, up, down, and makes it follow. Right eyebrow, up, down, up. He starts explaining how the show's live, that all the mistakes are real. Halfway through, he has a coughing fit. He looks back at the camera, says, anything you want goes on. He takes some tissues from his pockets, licks them, sticks them to his face. He does an impression of Marlon Brando in On the Waterfront. He does Brando in The Godfather.
All right. All right.
And it all works because he's different. He's just funny to look at. Here's how good he is. When Rolling Stone magazine does a look back at the 141 cast members to appear on Saturday Night Live, all those superstars, the ones who are still massive, they put Belushi at number one. He's the one who made the show happen on the edge. That's what they write. So of course, Hollywood wants him in the movies. That's how Animal House happens, the film those two scenes are from. It's set on a college campus in 1962 with one posh frat house and one which is nothing like posh. John plays John Blutarski, aka Bluto. The part's written specifically for him. Three other things you see him do. One, nail a bottle of whiskey in a single go. Two, stuff enough food in his face for 10 men. Three, start the world's greatest ever food fight. He's fat, gross, disgusting, but here's this weird thing about Belushi as Bluto. You love him. He hardly talks. You can't take your eyes off him. And why he's so funny? He just is. The eyes, the eyebrows, the deadpan expressions. The film costs $3 million to make and grosses $140 million. Without Animal House, there's no Police Academy. There's no Police Academy sequels. There's no American Pie. Pies. His next big film, The Blues Brothers. It starts as a sketch on Saturday Night Live. They get an actual band together, release a live album, have a hit record. Belushi is Jake Blues. Dan Aykroyd is his brother, Elwood. Carrie Fisher plays Belushi's old lover, out to kill him. Of course you know it, the look, the tunes, the black suits, the black ties, the dark shades. The guest stars, Aretha Franklin, James Brown, Ray Charles. The tagline, they're on a mission from God. The car chases. Whoa, the car chases. They set a new record, most cars destroyed in making one film. 103, if you're wondering. It's big in cinemas. It'll get way bigger on video and DVD. It's still selling now, all these years on. The soundtrack album, that's huge too. There's a point where Belushi is starring in the week's top grossing film. He's on the top rated television series and singing on the number one album. You see all that and you think everything this man touches turns to gold. Okay, now we need to talk about the trouble with John Belushi. He's making great money doing all this. He needs to. He's spending $50,000 a month on houses, on his family, on staff, on limos. None of them are perfect, these new stars. But Belushi is different level. He's been using cocaine. They're all using cocaine, but never as much as him. He starts turning up late. He falls asleep in his trailer. The stars have a private bar built on set just for them and their friends. The staff will get you any drug you want. He's married, Belushi. Him and Judy have been together since high school, still in love all these years on. But he's always out. You don't see John during the day. He's out till 5 in the morning, 6. Bars you want to go to, places you'd never go near. Anywhere where there's music and there's people and they're young and alive. He carries you along in his wake when you're with him. He's always up for an adventure, all that charisma, always clowning about, never off, always on. He's always asking for money in cash too, from his accountant, his agent, $800, $1,000, says it's for a guitar or a stereo. Everyone knows it's for coke. They give it to him anyway. He's a big boy. And he's not nice when you say no. You're thinking the obvious question, why don't they stop him? Well, they try. They hire this old Secret Service agent, someone who'd been a bodyguard to President Nixon. His job is to stay by Belushi's side wherever he goes, whatever time of day, to flush the coke down the toilet, to keep the dealers away, to find the secret stash. He asks Belushi one day, this straight-laced man comes right out with it. Why do you take drugs? Belushi grins, because they're there. The bodyguard asks him again, come on now, seriously. And Belushi looks at him with those big eyes, the expressive face, the light and the life, and says, it's the pressure. He says, whatever you do to maintain patience and stay alert, the people in this business rely on drugs to do that. The bodyguard, again, what happens when you lose that buzz? I don't know. I guess you just go crazy. Here's the thing. Everyone is doing it. His wife, until she sees what it's doing to him. The other stars, like Dan Aykroyd and Carrie Fisher, until they break, until they fall apart. The ones with the money, the ones chasing, the ones who've made it, the ones just hanging on. He's trapped in this world, the place they all want to be, the place none of them can handle. You go to a party with him and people come up to him, slip vials of coke in his pockets. It's the Hollywood way of saying, well done, you're a star, I'm your friend. You have to watch every handshake, every phone call, every toilet trip, every walk to the bar. And he's trapped another way too. Belushi doesn't always want to be Bluto. He wants to be Brando. He wants to play romantic leads. And he does, in a film called Continental Divide. It's not bad, and it does okay, but it's not Animal House, and it's not Bluto. That's what they all want, the movie men, the agents, the money. They want the hit again and again. So he keeps going. He's in LA all the time now. Away from his wife in New York, his roots in Chicago, getting up on the coke, using Quaaludes to bring him back down. None of it helps. The lining of his nose is slowly being destroyed. His voice is changing, getting thinner, more nasal. He's promising to write new scripts and failing. He's raging in meetings, sacking agents, taking them back on, screaming at friends, at strangers, paranoid, always paranoid. You do that much coke, the hit wears off. You need more. You need to go deeper, darker. Freebasing cocaine kicks it in hard. Heating it up, smoking the fumes, it's in your bloodstream and brain in 10 seconds. For 5 minutes, it's euphoria. For half an hour, you're up with the angels. And then you come down. Extreme fatigue, depression, anxiety. You sweat. You feel sick. You can't sleep. You can't sleep with people. You can't cope, so you do it again. Now it gets worse. Damage to your lungs, your mouth, your heart. You're risking seizures, risking strokes, heart attacks. Belushi, he starts injecting cocaine too. Now it hits as fast as lightning. Now it burns you like a fire. He asks an old mate in LA, have you ever tied off? Meaning, have you ever used a belt on your arm, found a vein, used a syringe? She says no. He says, it's like kissing God.
Hello everyone, my name is Matt Neglia, and I am the host of the Next Best Picture podcast, part of the Film Entertainment Awards website, nextbestpicture.com. On our show, we explore all year long what is possibly going to win Best Picture at the Oscars. We do this by conducting interviews with people within the film industry, holding weekly reviews of the latest theatrical releases, and on our main show, where we dive into various different topics, answer your fan questions, and also do our best to explore Oscar history's past in hopes that it will tell us something new for this upcoming award season race. We hope that you will join us on all of the various podcasting networks. We look forward to seeing you over at nextbestpicture.com.
There should be other films. Dan Aykroyd's writing this script called Ghostbusters, says there's a big role for Belushi. John? He's thinking the wrong things about the wrong films. He wants to do a movie about a punk singer. There's a scene in this script where the singer shoots up heroin. Belushi has this idea. Wouldn't it be cool to do it for real? to actually inject heroin on set. He tells a friend in the movie business, and the friend says, John, that's not acting. So John Belushi is in LA, renting a bungalow at the Chateau Marmont at the top of Sunset Strip. It's a weird building, the Chateau, built in the 20s, built to look like a French stately home. White walls, turrets and grey sloping roofs. Now we meet the woman with dark curly hair, with cheekbones that stick out for the wrong reasons. Her name's Kathy Smith. She's 35 now, 2 years older than Belushi. She's been a backing singer sometimes. She's been around the music scene. Heroin's her thing, not coke, but she can get her hands on anything. She's dealt for Keith Richards, for Ronnie Wood. She's the one who shows John a speedball. You know what that is? Heroin and coke mixed together with bottled water on a teaspoon. A ball of cotton wool to absorb it, a syringe in the cotton wool, and then into a vein. Takes 10 or 20 seconds to kick in. The best of both worlds, the horrors and the destruction too. There's something the addicts say in this part of California. They say it feels like scoring a touchdown in the Rose Bowl. They don't tell you the rest. They're not around long enough, usually. Okay, it's Thursday, the 4th of March, 1982. Belushi goes to his manager and asks for money, $1,500. He says it's for a guitar. The manager says, no. He phones New York, speaks to his old mate, Dan Aykroyd. Aykroyd doesn't like the way he sounds, hates the rumors he's been hearing. He says to Belushi, we could do a cruise. Leave next week, get some sea air, clean up. Talk about new projects. Belushi doesn't seem to be listening. So Aykroyd says, you've got to get on the boat. And Belushi starts screaming and yelling, who the fuck are you? Why are you picking on me? He slams the phone down. He asks his manager again, can I have $1,500 in cash? The manager's got a visitor round, a big player in the movie industry. So this time, he doesn't argue. He says, sure, John, get yourself a birthday present. Get the guitar. Belushi goes out, finds Kathy Smith, gives her the money, gets her to buy heroin and coke. At 11 p.m., they go out to a bar on the Strip. They're showing old repeats of Saturday Night Live on the TV screen. Belushi watches, drinks, shoots up coke in the toilets. Robert De Niro pops in. He's staying at the Chateau too, in the main hotel. They have a drink, agree to meet later at the bungalow. It's 2 a.m. now, Friday the 5th of March. Belushi's in the car park, buying coke off a dealer. He gets in his Mercedes and drives back to the Chateau. Kathy Smith in the passenger seat. There's visitors when they get back to the bungalow. Robin Williams has been doing stand-up at a club down the road, pushing himself, testing stuff out. He's still wired, so he comes calling, does a few lines with Belushi. He watches as Belushi stops, seems to fall asleep, head nodding, only to jerk back up again 5 seconds later. It's too much for Williams, this scene, this mess. He doesn't like this woman. Doesn't like how John looks. He walks out, gets in his car, drives home. Now it's De Niro who pops in. He doesn't stay long either. A line or two, then back to his room. It's boring here. No one's doing anything fun. Now it's just Belushi and Kathy Smith. He says he feels cold, although he's sweating. She mixes a speedball, shoots herself up first, then him. They're lying in bed now. He tells her again, I'm cold. She pulls the covers over him, turns up the heating, and goes back into the main room. writes a letter to another friend. When she goes back into the bedroom, Belushi is wheezing. He looks at her and says one thing: don't leave. She orders toast and coffee on room service, sits in the other room, checks on him at 10 a.m., hears him snoring, takes the keys to his Mercedes, and drives home. It's midday when they find him. His old fitness trainer comes round to drop off a typewriter. He knocks. There's no answer, so he lets himself in. Calls out. Nothing. Goes to the bedroom, sees a figure under the sheets in a fetal position. Calls out again. John, it's time to get up. Nothing. It's what he sees when he pulls back the sheets that he'll never forget. Belushi's lips are purple. His tongue is hanging out. One side of his body is dark, where all the blood has settled. When De Niro finds out, he starts crying. Robin Williams is filming his hit TV show, Mork and Mindy. Hears it from someone else. Belushi's dead. Says, pardon me? Williams walks out into the parking lot and stares at the perfect blue sky. Thinks, could I have saved him? Thinks, could that have been me? They bury him on Martha's Vineyard, back east. On his gravestone, they carve a skull and crossbones. The inscription says, here lies buried the body of John Belushi. I may be gone, but rock and roll lives on. Afterwards, his wife talks, writes letters to her friends. She talks about how often he'd watched Brando films, how the two of them watched On the Waterfront maybe 15 times start to finish. The story of the kid who could have been a contender, who ends up broken and beaten and alone. She says he was always talking about Brando, always practicing Brando. Maybe he related to the characters he did. She says, the guy who's fucking up, but doesn't mean to. This episode was written by Tom Fordyce and performed by me, Elroy Spoonface Powell, Spoon the Voice Guy. It was edited by Phil Brown. The music we used is from our partners, BMG Production Music. For research, we read Wired by Bob Woodward and Belushi by John Belushi's widow, Judy. We rewatched Animal House, The Blues Brothers, and plenty of Saturday Night Live, and used the archives of Rolling Stone, the BBC, the New York Times, and the LA Times. If this is your first episode, go and find our one about Robin Williams or Marilyn Monroe. And if you're looking for another podcast to listen to, we have another series called Death of a Rockstar. There you'll find the stories of Sid Vicious, Marvin Gaye, Jeff Buckley, George Michael, and more. Thanks for listening.
Crowd Network, a place where you belong.
Hey there!
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com.
See you soon.
Hi, I'm Christina Yerling-Biro, host of the podcast Pop Culture Confidential. Join me as I go way behind the scenes with some of the most influential people in entertainment and media. Hear actors such as Succession's Brian Cox talk about his favorite characters to play.
There always has to be a mystery. The audience have to be in a situation where they want to know what's going on.
Meet studio execs like Pixar chief Pete Docter and learn his secret on how he makes us cry.
Emotion is our first language.
And so many others who are defining popular culture, from Obama speechwriter David Litt to Top Chef host Padma Lakshmi.
We don't often think about food politically, or we don't want to, but it really is.
Join me. Search for Pop Culture Confidential wherever you get your podcasts.